This episode of Tea in the Treetops podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/treetops. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle or MP3 player. Welcome to episode 44 of Tea in the Treetops podcast. I'm Angela.
And I'm Philippa, and this is the official podcast of the Tea in the Treetops book review blog. Today is Wednesday, the 29th of June, which is, ironically, exactly 1 month since our last podcast. Yes. We've been a bit delayed, sorry.
Well, welcome to our first proper Two Little Birds book club podcast episode. So today we're going to be talking about The Crown's Game, our first book club book. We're going to give a bit of a review and ask you, the listeners, what you thought about it. We hope lots of people have been reading it, but I know there have definitely been some who's going to read it with us. So we'll, you know, ask you some questions of what you thought as well. Okay, so we should start right from the beginning by saying that this episode is going to be dark and full of spoilers, because we are going to be talking about The Crown's Game. We see lots of spoilers for that.
Game of Thrones.
We're also going to be talking about Game of Thrones. So if you don't, what I'm going to do is we'll talk about the things we want to spoil about. And then in the show notes, I'll put in some time markers as to when different sections start. So if you don't want to be spoiled for Crown's Game, you can skip that part. Go straight to the Game of Thrones part if you want. And so hopefully people can listen to different things and you won't be spoiled for what you don't want to be spoiled for. Does that make sense? I hope so.
Yes, I think so. Okay. Whether it works, I don't know, but
yeah. We'll see. So first, I just wanted to say that we have to say a big thank you to DM from Bookish Friends podcast, who left us a review on iTunes. Yay!
Thank you!
And so the Bookish Friends podcast, you can go and listen to them at bookishfriendsblog.wordpress.com, and they're a YA Australian podcast as well.
Fabulous.
So go and have a listen. It's pretty new, so I'm enjoying listening to them anyway. And thank you, Dan, for leaving us a review. We love you. Okay, so should we go straight into Crown's Game?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. So should I, do you want me to read the synopsis?
Sure. Okay. It's pretty long.
It is, and I think I've read it
before. It'll remind us as to what.
That's right. Vika Ondreva can summon the snow and turn ash into gold. Nikolai Karamov can see through walls and conjure bridges out of thin air. They are enchanters, the only two in Russia, and with the Ottoman Empire and the Kazakhs threatening, the Tsar needs a powerful enchanter by his side. And so he initiates the Crown's Game, an ancient jewel of magical skill, the greatest test an enchanter will ever know. The victor becomes the imperial enchanter and the Tsar's most respected advisor. The defeated is sentenced to death. Raised on tiny Ochevin Island her whole life, Vika is eager for a chance to show off her talent in the grand capital of St. Petersburg. But can she kill another enchanter, even when his magic calls to her like nothing else ever has? For Nikolai, an orphan, the Crown's Game is the chance of a lifetime, but his deadly opponent is a force to be reckoned with. Beautiful, whip-smart, imaginative, and he can't stop thinking about her. And when Pasha, Nikolai's best friend and heir to the throne, also starts to fall for the mysterious enchantress, Nikolai must defeat the girl they both love or be killed himself. As long-buried secrets emerge, threatening the future of the Empire, it becomes dangerously clear the Crown's Game is not one to lose. There's a lot of real tongue twisters in that. Just going to put it out there.
Partially the Russian names.
That's right. Mostly. Well, I feel like I was lucky because I listened to it on audiobook. So okay, I got to hear somebody else say them.
Of course. And out of interest, did the people reading the audiobook have like Russian
accents? It did have a slight Russian accent.
Okay, interesting. Okay, yeah. So obviously the two main books that I thought of when I first read this blurb, at least, was the... you said The Night Circus to start with.
Definitely.
And it's like almost an exact copy of the actual kind of plot of The Night Circus.
I reckon there's still some pretty big distinctions, but we can talk about that in a minute. Yeah.
And the other one is the... I've forgotten the name of it.
Is this the Shadow and Bone series that I've never read? The Grisha.
The Grisha series. So okay. I've read the first two books in that, and it's very different, but same kind of Russian kind of flavour to it. So, yeah. Different kind of story, though. It is fantasy, but this is more... it's more of a historical story with magagical realism elements, really, isn't it? Or not real.
Well, this even is not really realism. This is magical realism. I feel that this is magical realism.
Yeah.
So is
because a lot of
circus.
People don't know that the magic is there, right?
Oh, no, absolutely not. Hmm. Like, they keep coming up with excuses when they do these magical acts.
Yeah, that's right.
In the Crown's Game, all the people think that, you know, it's just the wonderful mechanics and the stars spending lots of money and, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So we've got Vika, who is red-haired, powerful, fiery,
feisty.
Fierce.
Yep.
And Nikolai, who is the quiet one, gentleman.
He's an orphan.
Yep. And so is Vika.
Well, that's she doesn't think that she's an orphan.
No. And they're both brought up by their mentor kind of teacher, which is similar to Night Circus.
Yes.
So if you haven't read Night Circus, it's a few years old now, but it's like Victorian era kind of.
It's got a real steampunk feel to it too, sort of thing. No, it goes over a lot of time. It goes through a big span of time. There are a lot of differences in the two. I think this is a much faster read.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot shorter.
But like the plot itself just seems to move quite fast.
Yeah, it's a bit more simple. And
The Night Circus is very subtle. It won't be for everyone. I'm sure it would have bored a lot of people to death. Yeah. Like if you don't like to me that was all about poetic writing.
Yes.
Like the writing of the Night Circus was just amazing. And some of the ideas and concepts were beautiful, but like the actual gut of a story in some ways wasn't that strong, I don't think. Like it was, the prose was trying to make up for a fairly weak pace.
Yep.
Well, this has a lot of good pace.
Yeah, that's right. And each move in the game happens, you know, it's not, you're not waiting around for ages for one of them to make a move. It just happens as it goes along. But there were a lot of very mixed reviews on Goodreads, actually. Okay. I was looking through them. People either loved it or were really not
into it
at all.
I think it was a bit slow to start. I think that first section, when you're sort of introduced to the two main characters before the Crown's Game really is beginning, I think I found that a little bit slow to get into.
Yeah, and then there's the elements like the love triangle.
I thought that was very well done.
Really? Well, I didn't mind the love triangle so much.
It was a very subtle love triangle.
Yeah, partially because Vika was just like, I don't want to do this with you guys. Well, I'm not interested. She's interested in Nikolai, but she's not like...
But Nikolai's not really interested together in her really either at first. Like, they both know the other's off the table, so they don't try to pursue it.
Yeah, because they think one of them's going to die, so they just go...
Well, they don't think one of them's going to die. Yeah, so, all right, we've got ahead of ourselves. So the main principle of the Crown's Game is... that in Russia, every generation has an enchanter, and that enchanter helps guard Russia.
Yes.
Very occasionally, it's quite rare, for some reason, at the same time as the death of the old, enchanter, two children will get the gift of enchantment.
Yep.
Now, the reality is that can't happen. You can't have two people drawing from the well of magic that is found in an area. Yep. And so... eventually, one of them would die. Both of them are weakened by having the other one there. And so the Crown, to speed things along, I guess, created the idea of the Crown's Game, which would make sure that there was a very defined winner. Yeah. So the Crown's Game either killed one of them off, like it was a game to the death, or the magic would kill them off anyway. Like the magic makes a choice if the Crown's Game doesn't make a choice.
That's right.
It's quite a gruesome... idea. And I still don't understand why there can't be a sharing of power.
Well, especially when they can work together and create things together.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was really expecting that this was going to turn a very different way towards the end. And I originally thought there was going to be this whole trope about love coming together and making them stronger. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
when they joined their magic, they were stronger for it.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, it didn't go in that direction. I was totally off on that one. I don't know if you felt that that was going to be kind of how it all came together, but look, it could still, this isn't the first, this is only book one. It could still get there.
There is going to be a second book. And no third, it's only duology, so it doesn't have long to wrap everything up. But
And I love the character of Pasha. I actually found him, out of the three characters, the most interesting for a long time.
Yeah, because he's the crown prince, but he's not interested in that.
Loves the people, and he's easy to get along with. And, you know, he saw Vika and he was like, there's something special about her, and he pursued her. But where in a triangle or in insta-love it's really fake, I felt that this wasn't fake. I thought this was like, this is somebody that knows what they want, and they did what they could, and she resisted so much, and Nikolai tried to keep him out of it.
Yeah.
And he just had that single-minded kind of arrogant aristocrat type feel about him, where he was like, I want this. I'm going to do what I need to woo this girl. And I kind of like that. Like, she didn't make it easy on him. There was no, I don't know, it was just, I found that side of things quite enjoyable.
He was quite a sweet guy up until
the end, where he makes some stupid decisions, but
he has to become the star, and it's all like, okay, yeah, I'm a bit of a meanie now. While I think of it, I just wanted to say that there is a ball in this one, like a masked ball, which is lovely. But I have pretty much every single YA fantasy I've read recently has to have a ball in it.
Really? Does that mean I'm going to get one in Court of Mist and Fury that I haven't come across yet?
I won't be spoiling Court of Mist and Fury. That was originally going to be one of our spoilery things for this episode, by the way, we're talking about that. But you haven't finished listening to it, so no. No, I won't say anything about that. You'll get to something like that at some point.
It seems very right-handed. I'm on the wrong
book. I think our next episode is going to be a bit of a Court of Mist and Fury talk. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, balls. Yes. There are. There's always some kind. Like if it's not actually called a ball or whatever, there's always some dinner or something that the main characters have to dress up for and end up looking beautiful. There always seems
to
be. But
she wears a dress of like ice and nature.
Yeah, that is amazing.
That is pretty. Cool.
That's cool. I like that. And she just did her own thing. She didn't use his dress up box. She just did her own thing. That was very cool. I like that. There didn't really seem to be any limit to the magic system either. Like, the only limit is how much you can physically stand.
See, I felt that there
was. She's drawing power from someone else, and he can't.
But
so
they don't know
limited.
About it. But the problem is, and I think this was kind of interesting, and I felt that because magic had been dying from the world or becoming less important in the world, like, they were less knowledgeable about how it all worked too. And then they both thought that they had years more before the Crowns game was going to be called. So I don't feel that they really had strong knowledge of what was happening.
Yeah, well, they could just do stuff. They just knew how to do stuff. They didn't, like, I don't know.
See, I didn't
we weren't
feel
there
that.
When they were being trained by their
mentors. I didn't feel that. I felt that that was well understood and that there were limitations and he could never understand how and just assume she was just so much more powerful than him.
Yeah, that was well
but
done.
There were reasons behind that, obviously. I felt that was pretty good, and I felt they both had their strengths and they have very different strengths, and they realized that.
Yeah.
Well, she was very good with nature while he was very good with mechanics.
Yeah, that's true.
But
actually, one of the things that a few people said in their reviews, their negative reviews, was that they went into it expecting that because it was a game that where one of them, they needed to kill the other one or win. Like, you know, they needed to make sure they were the winner in order to survive. They expected it to be more cutthroat and kind of bloody and whatever. But it didn't turn out that way because they ended up just sort of...
No, but it was also...
painting St. Petersburg and
But
like,
that was very clearly done too. And I think this is what I liked about the Night Circus as well. It was a game to test your... to show your skill.
Yeah, it wasn't about... Like, the killing of each other was introduced by the lady. I can't remember her name.
The duel was the ending, but that's not how it would normally end. Normally, they would either kill each other off because they were cutthroat people, but neither of their personalities were cutthroat.
Yeah, that's right.
And that is part of
it. Yeah.
So, because they aren't cutthroat, either the magic was going to kill somebody off,
yeah,
or, you know, it was just going to happen accidentally. And look, they both tried to be cutthroat and they both felt horrible about it. It was not in their innate personalities to be cutthroat. Right. It was never in Vika's, but she was never trained believing there was another enchanter that she was... Vika grew up believing that she was the only enchanter, like most generations.
Well, so did he.
No, he always knew that he was going to be in a duel.
Oh, really? Yes. I thought he just thought that he was going to be the enchanter.
She had always made it very clear that he was going to have to compete, and that was why she was trying to be so vicious with him.
Oh, okay. I forgot that.
So he knew more about it than she did. And that was the advantage that they felt going into it.
Mm-hmm.
Galena.
That's right. Well, okay, so people listening, please tell us whether you thought that... that the duel wasn't, or the competition wasn't fast and furious and bloody enough, or if you enjoyed the slow kind of beautiful things, which I keep going back to Night Circus because this part of it's very similar to that. Like they just create more and more beautiful things as the Night Circus goes on.
They're never trying to kill each other, are they?
They're never trying to kill each other, but this one is trying to kind of go in that direction, but doesn't ever quite get. Like, in the Night Circus, as I was reading it, I thought that it was going... It always felt a little bit sinister, like there might have been something going to happen.
It's been so long since I read it, but there was definitely a sinister element to it.
But it wasn't like that. Like, they weren't going to try and... They were just going to try and shut the circus down, I think. But this one was much more like, no, we must succeed or we're going to die.
It's like win or die. Yeah. And they are your options.
In the Game of Thrones, you win or you die.
Exactly.
Things on the Game of Thrones on the brain. Okay, so what else do we want to say about this? St. Petersburg. I was going to say the descriptions of St. Petersburg were great. Yeah. And she is at Evelyn Skye, says on her website that she's actually... studied Russian literature and history at uni, so she knows the detail.
Yes.
I did see one review from someone who is Russian, who comes from Russia, who was not impressed with the language, like she didn't get it quite right.
Well,
and that's sort
she
of,
did say she had to take some leeway.
Yeah, and I think that's if you're someone who doesn't come from a country and you're writing about that country, it can be really hard to
But she fell into Russia. Like, she did one Russian literature subject and then she decided she loved it. So did her entire degree on that.
Well,
yeah.
I thought it was great.
Am I the only one that reads acknowledgements? I find the acknowledgements as interesting.
Oh, no,
I did read
the acknowledgements. It was such a long time ago, I just don't remember that. Yeah. But she did...
Okay, so an actual Russian person was not impressed.
Yeah,
okay.
Not at all. And, I went to St. Petersburg in the dead of winter when it was, like, icebound and freezing.
Mm-hmm.
But this is set in summer, obviously, so it just... It gives the feeling of the city, but it must be such a beautiful place in summertime.
Yeah. I just think it's funny because I'm just looking at a couple of reviews, but I feel like perhaps people are just, the second there's anything that seems remotely like a love triangle or something that could be deemed as insta-love, it doesn't matter if it actually works with the story, they've decided it must be a terrible book. Yeah. I get that it's done a lot. But I think it's got a place, and I think it's going
if
to have
it's
a place
done,
in
if
literature,
it's done well and doesn't annoy
in movies,
you too much.
In human, it's just a human evolutionary thing that we are bound to, and it's always going to be the case, and it always has been the case.
Mm.
The difference is doing it well or doing it because it just continues a storyline and you're not actually that great a writer. I actually feel that this was done really well. Yes, there was some insta-love, but it wasn't like that each of them look at each other and they fall in love and they must be together forever and ever.
Yeah, because Vika wasn't
there
really
is nothing like
it,
that in it. Nothing remotely. The only insta-love is Pasha, and that isn't even insta-love. That is just a single-minded arrogance that I must have this, as you would expect from the heir to a throne.
Yes.
And I actually thought it was quite alpha male-ish. I didn't think it was that insta-love-ish. And then... The love triangle, well, yeah, there was a bit of a love triangle there, but I actually think it was a really well done one. Like,
I don't know.
I just think it's... I just find some people just choose to dismiss things.
I thought it was great.
Anyway.
The part where the part where Nikolai actually comes clean with him and says that he's the other enchanter and mm-hmm. that he loves her too. I thought that scene was excellent. I really liked
yes,
that part.
Yes.
And it was everything I hoped it would be when he eventually revealed himself. So
I don't know why he never told Pasha. Well, I think he should have. He felt he couldn't.
Was he bound to keep it a secret? Was that...
No, I don't think it's like that. But because he was heir to the throne, you'd think he would have been involved anyway. Like, how did he know he wasn't involved?
Yeah.
I don't know. I felt that subversion thing was a bit... That was the only thing that I was irritated by.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Okay. Well, I think I gave it 4 stars.
I'm pretty sure I gave it 4 stars too.
Partially because I thought some of the writing wasn't...
it's a debut author. It was from a debut author, and it was clearly
very promising.
Yeah,
for the next one, it's going to be good.
That's right. I totally agree. I think I just think is it the most best done YA fantasy ever? Maybe not, but I think it had a lot of good ideas, and I think I felt it stood alone. Yes, it was like Night Circus, but I still think it was really unique. And I think it was the writing was great. I don't know. For a first-time writer, it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good.
Like, Night Circus is one of my favourite books that I've read in the last few years.
Not that we can remember how it ends.
No. I mean the story itself isn't brilliant either, but the actual writing is amazing. So, and I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was great too. So... So we want to know what you thought about it, dear listeners. Tell us what you thought about the game, about Vika and Nikolai. Did you like Pasha or did you find him too arrogant or whatever?
What was everybody's favourite enchantment? Like, which one did you think was the best enchantment?
I really loved the benches on the island.
The benches
were
pretty good.
Just amazing.
That was pretty good.
It was great.
I actually thought the dress-up box for the entire kingdom for the basketball was pretty awesome too.
Yeah, that was awesome. I could do
I really liked the fly. I thought he was a sweetheart. I felt really sorry that Galena found him and took him in.
Yeah. And like Nikolai's mum, how freaky
was
that?
Well, that's the only part of the story that I felt wasn't wrapped up very well in the end. Well, it kind of did. But it didn't.
What happened to her in the end?
I don't know. The last thing I remember was she... are we allowed to do really massive spoilers?
Yeah, we said at the start
Well,
we
doesn't she stab the Tsar? Isn't that how it ends?
Oh, yeah.
And then what happens to her? Does she actually see Nikolai? Does she make it to the island in that duel? I can't remember.
No, yeah, doesn't she see him and she tells him that she killed the king and he goes... I don't want anything to do with you or something.
Oh,
and
God, more Game of Thrones parallels. Anyway, sorry, I'm thinking.
We'll have to look it up later. But, okay, so if you know and you can remember, please remind us. But, oh, God.
The benches were amazing. All of them were amazing. I really like the dress-up box. I think that was my favourite.
Uh-huh.
I just thought that was, like, considering they were trying to impress for a party, I thought that was a great idea, letting everyone have a magical dress that was just perfect. Like. Yeah. Everyone got to be Cinderella for the night.
Yeah, I wonder if the dresses disappeared in the morning.
I think they did. I think they said that they did. I'm pretty sure it said that they did. But yes, it's a great idea.
Mm. Anyway, great read. Good start to our book club.
I think so too.
And okay, so our July book, we've decided we may ask for people to give us suggestions possibly, but for July we're going to read A Darker Shade of Magic by V.E. Schwab.
So this isn't a brand new book. So book 2 came out this year and book 1 was out last year. So this is book 1 that we're talking about.
Yep, so neither of us have read it, and we'd like to.
It should be readily available. It's got good overall Goodreads reviews.
Yes.
Sitting on
Should we read part of the blurb?
Sure. Do you want me to read it, seeing your throat sore?
Sure, okay.
Kel is one of the last Antari, a rare magician who can travel between parallel worlds, hopping from grey London, dirty, boring, lacking magic and ruled by Mad King George, to red London, where life and magic are revered and the Maresh dynasty presides over a flourishing empire, to white London, ruled by whoever has murdered their way to the throne, where people fight to control magic and the magic fights back and back, but never black London, because travelling to black London is forbidden and no one speaks of it now. Officially, Kel is a personal ambassador and adopted prince of Red London. carrying the monthly correspondences between the royals of each London. Unofficially, Kel smuggles for those willing to pay for even a glimpse of a world they'll never see, and it is this dangerous hobby that sets him up for accidental treason. Fleeing into grey London, Kel runs afoul of Delilah Bard, a cut purse with lofty aspirations. She robs him, saves him from a dangerous enemy, then forces him to take her with him for a proper adventure. But perilous magic is afoot and treachery lurks at every turn. To save both his London and the others, Kel and Lila will first need to stay alive, a feat trickier than they hoped.
It sounds awesome.
So is he from Red London?
I think so.
Where it's revered? You'd think so.
Well, he says from Grey London. I don't know. But it's another magician's one.
No, he's the adopted prince of Red London.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we'll give a good sort of 5 or 6 weeks for this one, I think, because we're a bit late in the.
So we'll do this one in.
So it'll be sort of early August probably. Yeah. So you've
just
got
before I go
quite
away.
A few weeks. Okay. Yep. Good plan. And we're also going to have a giveaway for this book. So if you would like to, once this post goes up for this episode, which should be up if you're listening to this. There'll be a giveaway on there where you can enter to win a copy of this book,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully it'll get to you in time for you to read it before we talk about it. So yeah, get a copy. Right. Now, Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
Now, we've already talked for quite a while. We've already talked for half an hour, so we better not spend too long talking about Game of Thrones.
How do we keep Game of Thrones in a...
So if you don't want to be spoiled for Game of Thrones season 6, and if you want to read Winds of Winter before you hear any more about it, which is going to be, I don't know how you're going to do that, because I've been trying to avoid spoilers for one day before I get to see the episode. So, stop listening now, skip forward. But, oh my God, it's over, and it was amazing.
We've got 42 weeks until another episode graces our presence. Oh my God.
And some of what we predicted
episodes,
came to pass.
Oh, those last two episodes, they were amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. I mean, they're always great, but these ones, like for once, instead of it all being like, no, I don't want that person to die. No,
yeah.
For once
things
I was like, the
going
good
right.
people are actually persevering, and it's just such a nice change.
Yes.
You know, the tide had to turn eventually, right?
Yep.
Either that or they were all going to be killed off. Mm.
Well, I do feel that at the end of this whole thing is going to be this group of women standing around all the dead bodies of their menfolk going, what have we done? Because all the men are dying and these women are just in power.
I know. I think it's interesting because I feel in a world that has been very patriarchal and very male-dominated, I think that we are coming into season 7 and it's the women are in power. There are women everywhere except for Jon Snow. It is all about the ladies.
Yep.
Strong women on every seat of power you can come across. Even 11-year-old strong women.
Oh, she's
from
amazing.
House Mormont. Oh,
Brianna
she
Mormont.
Was great.
She's brilliant. I love her.
She was great. yes.
And we've had theories confirmed, like at least the L part of the L plus R equals J.
No, it's pretty
theory.
Much. Look, it's so what it is so.
Well, it's known that
it's
they
it's so
they were
obvious that that was it. It is just so obvious. Like there were even references back just in the snapshots to Littlefinger taking Sansa down to the crypt and saying, making the comment about wars wouldn't have been fought. None of us would be where we are today if Rhaegar hadn't have loved your mother type thing. Like it's so obviously that's going to be.
Yeah.
And that scene when you see the baby and the baby opens its eyes and then it goes to Jon Snow. I was like, that could have been cheesy, but it was really awesome.
No, it was really well done.
It was just
awesome. And the other thing I found really awesome was the first part of this latest episode with the blowing up of the Sept and the and Tommen just like falling out the window.
I picked
like,
that early
whoa.
In the episode. I knew that I was positive that Tommen and Margaery were going to be gone by the end of this season.
Yeah.
I felt that was happening.
Well, I knew that I was pretty sure that Tommen was going to meet.
Well, we
his
knew
end
that Tommen was eventually going to die because of the prophecy.
Yes. Mm. But when he got up and jumped out the window, I was just like, oh my God, he just, we just did that.
No.
There was no like gruesome death scene or anything. No. It was and just
I just thought it was such karma for Cersei because she was sitting there so smug. She thought she pulled it all off. She caused, like, she can't blame anyone but herself for that child's death.
In that, like, 10 minutes in that episode, they just got rid of so many main characters. Like, Marjorie, all of the Sparrows and the High Sparrow. Like, all the Lannisters, the only ones left are, like...
Jaime and Cersei,
the only Lannisters.
And Tyrion.
There. Yeah.
Tyrion doesn't really classify himself as a Lannister, I don't think, these days. But there's also no one from Highgarden. The Tyrells have been...
Yeah, the Tyrells are gone.
Like, Elena. Elena is the only one left. Yep. Or Olenna.
Olenna.
She is it.
Yep.
Because she had one son and two grandchildren and they all died.
I loved her in Dawn with the sand snakes and she's like,
oh yeah,
who are you? Have you got anything to say? No, shut up. Like,
yeah.
Oh, that was great.
That was she's great. Such a bitch.
Fantastic. Anyway, yeah.
And I got to the end. Oh yeah, there were so many bits in that that just things came back and little bits like the Arya.
I didn't pick that was her at all until she said...
No, neither did I.
Until she went like that to pull her face off and I'm like, oh my God, it's her.
Okay, but riddle me this because I don't get it.
Mm.
So the no-face god or the many-face god, I can't remember his exact name.
Yes.
I felt that she had been kicked out and taken away from his patronage. Yet she obviously hasn't been because she has the skill to take on somebody else's face.
Well, she learned how to do that.
When did she actually do it though?
She
helped prepare, but she never got to do it. So does this mean that even though his disciples have kicked her out because they reckon she shouldn't be there, the actual God still wants her and has made that clear or something?
But is it actually magic or is it just a great skill that they learn?
No, but this is what I think has been great about this season. All the gods, and to me what this really is, it's like a game of chess for the gods and they're positioning all their players in for the final battle. And like, you know, the sea god, he's come back, he's brought back the brother, he started that, he's starting to make his play. You know, the Lord of Light's obviously making some big plays. You know, we got introduced to, we saw that vision with Sam and the library, or it's not a vision, and that's the oldest town in the entire Azeroth. It's before the first people.
Azeroth. Thank you.
Warcraft on the brain. Oh.
Yes, you're right. Westeros.
It's the oldest. Like, all of these old gods are coming back and they're making plays.
The old gods and the new are going to have a war.
That's right. And I think that...
And the dragons. And the Night's King.
Yeah.
Actually, and we haven't seen much white action since, like, the middle of the series.
I think that that's all starting to come to a head.
Mm.
And I reckon Arya's still being given his patronage or something. Mm. Or she's still inspired by him, even though she's left Braavos and...
She's gone a bit crazy.
Oh, no. She's taken into her own. She's stopped fighting it. She's a Stark. She knows she's a Stark. Which is what she should have done. I think those scenes where she was watching that play with Cersei and the death of Joffrey, I just thought that was just so brilliantly handled. Yes. It was just, you know, watching this twist of how things had happened and she just sat there and watched it. I don't know. There was something about that. I was like, that is really brilliant.
Yep.
Really brilliant storytelling, man. I don't know how that would have translated into a book.
I think they did really well this time with the script. The script were sort of, I don't know, things were glossed over a little bit in some ways, but
the actual story. They didn't have a story that they had to base it on. So what we're really seeing is they had the skeletons, and what we're seeing is the genius of HBO writers here. Yeah. And it really is just, I don't know, I thought it was a really solid season.
Yeah.
Ironically, the Hodor hold the door thing didn't do it for me. I know it did it for everybody else.
Oh, it was so sad. But I was like,
okay, I get it. That's obviously George R. R. Martin style. It just felt him.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was as amazing. I don't know. I think there's much more pivotal, brilliant moments that have been had in the season than that.
Yeah. There was a lot of people saying that the Battle of the Bastards episode was like the best one ever and whatever. But I sort of got to the end of it and I
really
was like,
liked it. I thought when
it was great.
When you
I
saw
enjoyed
Jon
it.
Snow and you could just see he's like, should I give up?
Hmm.
And he's being trampled and can't breathe, and then he forces himself up. He's not
yeah,
gonna
that,
die
that
again.
That part of it was amazing.
That was
and the battle
just great.
It was great. But I actually thought I remember being wowed a lot more by a lot earlier, like the Battle of the Blackwater episode. I thought
oh, that
was
great.
One
was
amazing.
That was really good.
And there have been other episodes really that I thought were amazing. Yeah, yes, that one.
But
as well.
I don't know. I thought I picked it
this
straight away
brilliant.
That Ramsay was going to shoot Rickon in the back. I was like, he's so going to be that sort of a prick.
We're like,
so going to be that prick.
Damn you!
I know.
Don't run straight.
But I don't know. I thought that was really. I thought it was really well done. It looked fantastic.
Yes,
but I thought the actual, like, I don't know. I just thought it was really well done. You got a really good judge of their characters, you know, where he offered in public to just fight him one-on-one. I thought
yeah.
that was great. It was such a Jon Snow move.
Yes.
Such a Jon Snow move. I also thought it was interesting and it was important because it showed how, even though we feel that they're kind of all secluded characters that aren't involved in anything else, like his deeds and heroics up at the gate have filtered down
yeah.
through the North,
yeah.
which is important because he obviously needs to be respected.
Yeah. It was also interesting that he's still not listening to Sansa. Like she's
well, that's
trying
interesting
to tell him
dynamic
stuff,
there. But
like,
she's not
yeah.
really trying to tell him like. She, I can't tell.
She didn't have anything to bring to the table, really. Apart
other
from
than
the fact
you're going
that,
to get, you are underestimating your
yeah,
opponent.
Yeah, I know Ramsay, he wants you to do this. Don't do what he wants you to do. And
he
then
did
it
anyway.
Yeah.
But do you know what? Could you respect him if he didn't? Do you know
well,
what I mean?
I don't know what they could have done differently, so I can't really
well,
say.
Well, they could have sat there and watched and let him die. And then they wouldn't have got, then they wouldn't have got surrounded. They wouldn't have broken ranks and
yeah.
they wouldn't have got surrounded.
But it also would have... And if the other thing is if the Knights of the Vale hadn't, like, Gandalfed in at the last minute...
Oh, how much is that in Gandalf scene? They
the,
did
the,
it,
the writers
exactly.
of Rohan arrived, then they would have... It wouldn't have... It would have been a different battle because Ramsay would never have come out of Winterfell and they would have just had a siege.
Yes.
Because they would have had the numbers and...
That's right.
But anyway, it played out that way and a lot of people died and there was a huge pile of bodies. And
oh, yeah.
But interestingly, all the blood and guts were in that episode and hardly anything in the final episode. The only really gruesome part was when the kids
oh,
stabbing
yeah.
Grandmaster Pycelle to death. That was pretty horrible. But apart from that, and also like Gregor Clegane going... to town on what's her name
and
that was pretty
cool. Arya killing and baking all of the
yeah but we don't see any it's just it's,
you saw the
you
pie
hear
flap.
About it yeah.
you saw the pie flap
that was pretty gross
that
but
was
I mean actual
gross.
Visual it's not like Oberyn's head exploding
no that is true yeah we did see Clegane's face sort of the zombiness
yeah Yeah, it's
so
gruesome.
I'd love to know which god that's related to.
No, that's just Qyburn being a weird ass. I don't know what's going on with that. Anyway, got a whole year to wait.
So what
well, not
we,
quite a whole
what
year.
What did we pick? What did we pick? What did we get right? What did we get wrong? I can't even think.
Well, you said that the final scene would be Daenerys sailing across the ocean.
Oh, that was
so going
to be the case.
Yeah, we knew that. I said that Bran was going to be a baddie, and while he wasn't a baddie, he did some bad things that probably changed the course of things.
What do you mean? Because he was stupid and
yeah,
touched
yeah.
that dude.
Yeah, and brought the Night's
but
King
they
to
also,
them.
But they also, there's
stuff.
Some fan theories that he is going to go through the wall, and because he's already been touched, he's going to break the magic that's repelling the wall by going through it.
Oh, that's interesting.
And that's going to be how the Night King comes through. Winter arrived. I think they could have made that
yeah.
a little bit more obvious.
Yeah.
Like they said the white, we got a white
yeah,
dove.
Yeah, they saw
and I'm
some
like,
white birds flying.
What
but
the? No, but like Sansa says to Jon, we got a white dove from the Citadel. And I'm like, what does that mean? What does that mean? And he goes, I guess winter is finally here. But I'm like, what does the dove signify for that? Like, I was like, why? Do they all turn white when it gets to winter? Like,
no, the maesters send out the white.
Why? Okay, well, that I didn't think was very clear. And I thought that was a bit of an awkward scene.
Okay. I thought it was a nice scene because they were all happy.
But like, and I was like, also think, we don't see John smile. All the time, John's like, you know, we have to trust each other. We've got enemies all around us. And she never actually said anything. And I'm like, I just can't trust that you are not going to try and do something there. I don't know if it's just because she has been screwed and manipulated so much. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, she doesn't trust anybody herself.
And I don't understand why they were all willing to rally around King of the North again when they had a fully legitimate heir sitting right next to him.
Yeah, and also when...
That, to me, was odd.
And when, like, Lyanna Mormont is obviously the lady of the Mormont house, so obviously it's not a male thing.
It's not that's
a,
right.
You know. So, I don't know. Yeah, that is weird.
I don't get it. I don't quite get if Sansa are actually supportive of that.
I was a little bit disappointed that Jon didn't say, actually, I'm not going to do it.
Yes, he should have done a Theon, who I thought was actually quite... You could just see how much Theon has actually changed.
Yeah, he's got...
When he goes, grown, no, I am not the right person to lead. Yara is the right one to lead.
Yeah.
That Yara Daenerys flirty thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a well-done scene, but I was like, no. Not
yeah,
for me.
If they're going to do it, then that's fine. But I don't think she's...
Daenerys and Jon need to make babies and fall in love. But part of me thinks that Daenerys and Jon are going to end up pitted one against another.
Maybe.
I haven't decided if they're going to align.
It might just be everyone against the Lannisters.
No, I feel that both of them are going to go say, you know what, we can't make this decision. We have a bigger enemy to fight. I think that's where it's going to come down to. It's going to come against King of the North. She'll take over the South. This is my prediction.
Okay.
They're meant to battle it out. The White Walkers come down and they both agree there are bigger things, and that is when they discover that they actually, and I still think he's going to get burnt and come out of the fire like she does, and that's when they're going to realize that he's actually
a
Targaryen.
Knows now.
Yes, but
so
I don't know.
What's he
going to
do with that information?
I don't know. But I really think that that is going to be the way they realize it, that they're
maybe
actually related.
Hmm.
We will see. We've only got, like, what, 13 episodes, I've said, left.
Yes.
How sad is that?
And who knows when Winds of Winter, the book, will be out. Hopefully sooner rather than later, but hopefully before the next season.
Every time we get to this point, I'm like, maybe I should read the books. And when I look
there
at them...
There is a lot more detail.
Then I look at how long they are. The biggest thing, the biggest clincher this time, though, is my dad, who is all things literature snobbery, you know, considering his background...
Yep.
As a lecturer in literature, he thinks some of the dialogue is brilliant in Game of Thrones. And I'm like, well, look, if a literature snob can see a lot of good, maybe I need to give it another go.
Well, my favourite book out of the whole series is A Dance with Dragons, which is a shame because it's the last one. It's like book 5 at the moment.
Well, I only ever read the first two and I wasn't very impressed with
the first two. The second one's good once you get up to the Red Wedding part. After that, it's good. But then Feast for Crows is like really boring.
My other half reckons he's going to do the 48-hour Audible audiobook. I was just like, good luck with that.
Yes.
48 hours. Man, we've only had 60-something hours of Game of Thrones so far for the entire six seasons.
Yeah, but you don't 48 you hours sit down and listen one. In one-hour increments.
I know.
All right, so shall we just quickly mention what we've been reading?
Well, sure, I can go first because I have had a woeful amount of reading. I am
even
still...
though you're on holidays?
Well, I've only just gone on holidays and I've been working more than normal because I'm on holidays.
Yes.
And I'm driving less, so I'm not listening as much as I was. So basically I am still listening to A Court of Mist and Fury.
Yes.
I'm up to part 2 of that. And that is it, unless you would like to count biology, anatomy textbooks and midwifery textbooks that I was trying before my exams. So okay. That's me done. I was fast. How about
wow.
you?
Okay. Well, you will have to make sure you we don't record until you've read some more things. Otherwise, we'll have nothing to talk about
oh,
next
God,
time.
Don't say that. I'll manage something. I promise.
Do you recommend the Court of Thorns and Court of Mist and Fury audio book?
It's not my favourite voice. It's a bit flat.
Oh.
Do you know what my favourites have been so far?
What's that?
And that is A Corner of White and Cracks in the Kingdom. That series, which had a male and female voice for the two. I really like Madeline's voice.
Yep.
Mark couldn't stand Elliot's voice. It had that slight country drawl about it.
Yeah.
I felt it was just great. I thought they were really good. I think that it's a bit flat, this Court of Mist and Fury, to listen to, which is a little bit sad. I prefer it to The Lady That Did the Truth Witch, though.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Well, if you're interested in audiobooks, then as you might have heard at the top of the show, our show's now being sponsored by Audible. So if you like to support Tea in the Treetops, you can go to audibletrial.com/treetops and download a free audiobook of your choice when you sign up for a 30-day trial. And you've been using Audible for a while, haven't you?
Yes.
And they've got lots of the
they
books that you want
to
read.
They have lots. The reality is you get your one credit a month. I well and truly have more than one book that I would like to read a month, but it's they've got a really good collection. And I think maybe it's not the case in the US, but in Australia, in comparison to the ones that the library provide, you have a lot more option for YA especially.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. I find it's good for me anyway.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, I've actually been listening to Shiver by Maggie Stiefvater.
Oh, okay. Yep, yep, yep.
And it has two voices. It's got, because it's from two
I
points
like
of view.
That.
It's like
a
the girl and the guy. And there's two voices for that. So I'm really enjoying that a lot more than just one person reading the whole story.
See, I agree. I prefer it with the two.
Mm.
Apparently, the Jay Kristoff and Amy Kaufman...
Illuminate
has a great cast.
It's a full cast. Yeah, 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 I heard
and
that.
And I think that is a much nicer way to listen.
Yeah, it's but like an actual radio play rather than...
Yeah, almost. I don't know. When the girls are trying to do the guys' voices, I find it really hard sometimes.
Yes, takes you out of the story a bit when
that's
you...
That's right. And I haven't actually listened to one where it's just a male so far, I don't think.
No, I haven't. But the other thing that I find with them, which I'm discovering with Shiver, even though there's not really a lot of it, is when they have the romantic scenes and like when they're sort of getting a bit romantic...
Okay.
It's a lot more intimate when someone's reading to you. You just sort of sit there going...
Oh, yes, I have to admit...
It's a bit weird.
I have to admit, I had on Court of Mist and Fury the other night.
Yeah, because it's like actually
and
explicit.
Using the F word. And my other half is like, what are you
listening
to?
In the room
well, I was going to sleep and I have it on with a sleep timer.
Yeah.
And he comes to bed and he was like... What are you listening to?
It's a smut that you're listening to.
I was like, it's not erotica. I promise. Anyway, that was slightly awkward.
Well, I've been nearly finished with Shiver, and I am going to go on to the selection, but I had to wait until it was available on the library site that I was getting it from. So
Overdrive.
I will listen to the selection next.
I'm all on top of the different apps now.
Good. Well, I've been reading loads. It's been a whole month.
Well, that's good because you've read for the both of us.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about all of them, but I will mention. I've actually not reading anything at the moment apart from listening to Shiver.
Yeah.
Because I just finished reading Riders of Thunder Realm by Stephen Loughran. Now, we talked about this at the start of the year.
Is this a dinosaur or something?
Yeah, dinosaur riders and herders. And I said that it sounded amazing. And then Stephen
sent me
an email and said, thanks for talking about it on the show. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I got a copy from Hardy Grant Egmont and Stephen, and I loved it.
That's awesome.
It's fantastic. It's like these paladeros who are the knights kind of thing, and they live in this world, which has sort of high technology everywhere except this one area where there's some ancient kind of magic that's protecting the area from technology things. Like they can't, none of the trains or, you know, technological things in the rest of the world can get through this barrier.
Okay.
So anyway, the basically is that this area is like this backwards in technology, I suppose you call it, but where they herd dinosaurs and I don't know, it's hard
to explain. What sort of dinosaurs are we talking here, man?
Well, the main character is like a young guy who rides a raptor.
Is it a velociraptor? Which I've just discovered are actually, apparently...
Yeah, they're really tiny.
They aren't as big as they are at Jurassic Park. No, no. At Jurassic Park, while they tried to do everything else factual, got that on purpose wrong to make it scarier. I was like, I feel cheated.
Velociraptors are like chickens. They're really tiny, kind of.
I don't think they're that tiny. I think they're meant to be the size of a golden retriever.
Okay. Well, anyway.
I'm also really devastated that a protoceratops is only the size of a sheep. And I was like, oh. I feel like my whole childhood has just come undone. Anyway.
Oh, no. I'm sorry that you were disappointed.
And a lot of them had feathers.
Yeah.
And they were actually very coloured.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this book has not just dinosaurs, but also one of the people in the quest. They go on this quest to become paladeros, basically. Mm-hmm. And one of them rides this great bear, like a really big bear, and the other one's got like this saber-toothed cat type thing. But he manages to. It's a great kind of, I guess, young YA. It's not.
Wild West, but with dinosaurs.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah.
Mm.
And it's a little bit steampunky, a bit sort of, it packs things in like, there's a transgender kind of element to it. There's all sorts of different things. And it's an Australian author. It's basically love was YA. It's great. I loved it. So I enjoyed it.
Dino Riders sounds fun to me.
Yeah. So I'm going to read The Road to Winter by Mark Smith next, which is just about to come out,
mm-hmm.
Which is I think it's like there's a it's not like a zombie apocalypse. There's like a disease that sort of strikes Australia and society's collapsing and people are trying to survive and stuff. So
okay.
It's not post-apocalyptic, but it's, you know,
it's getting
society
that way.
Collapsing.
It's not post-apocalyptic because it's still apocalyptic from the sounds of things.
I haven't started reading it yet, so I can't give any more detail. Okay. We'll have to talk about it next time. And so the other thing I did today was go to the movies to see two different movies today, which is totally unheard of.
I joined you for the second one.
Exactly. So I took my son to see Finding Dory in the middle of the day today, which was very cute.
See, Finding Nemo is one of my least favourite Pixars.
Oh, really?
Yep.
See,
that
and really
A Bug's
like
Life.
Finding Nemo.
Not my big,
yeah,
not my big fan.
I wasn't such a fan of Bug's Life. But I love Finding Nemo, mainly because my kids like to watch it over and over again.
Okay. So
but Finding Dory, while it was cute and it had a lot of references to Nemo, it didn't have the big kind of adventure kind of feel to it like Finding Nemo did.
Yeah.
And it was beautiful and everything like Pixar movies are, but I don't know. My son, by the end of it, he was just like, Can we go now? Like, is this over yet? And that was partially because it had so many ads at the start. But anyway, that aside, then we went to see the Warcraft movie just now.
Yes, we did.
For the second time.
For the Alliance.
For the Horde, no. if you know us at all and have been following our blogging history, we're both Warcraft fans from way back.
Yes.
Spent a good sort of 10 years of our lives
playing it
addicted
on and
to
off.
The games.
Yes.
I thought the movie, like, there's been a lot of kind of critical hacking and slashing of this movie.
It has been absolutely shredded.
Yeah. But I thought it was beautiful. From a fan perspective, I thought it was great.
Anyone that reckons that wasn't from a cinematography perspective, not exceptional,
yeah,
is just being critical for the sake of being critical. The story, yeah, it was a bit lackluster. Yeah, the story was pretty bad. But it is up there in terms of, like, especially, like, I've seen it now in 2D and 3D. That 3D was amazing.
Yes.
And, you know, I was so worried that, like, the mage spells and the warlock spells were going to look really cheesy.
No, they were my
favourite thing.
And they were
just brilliant.
They were awesome. Yeah.
And they just managed to get lots of just little really unique quirks that are just so Warcraft in, like the polymorph and the murloc. And, you know, they don't play
the
a big centre part. The griffins.
The cities were just amazing. Ironforge is, like, just
the, like,
straight
orc,
out of
the orc wargs or whatever that is they ride. Mm. Oh, my God, they were brilliant too.
Yep.
They did. It just looked amazing. Now, yes, the story wasn't the best of stories.
Yeah, it's sad, really, because the Warcraft story is brilliant. Like, Warcraft is, like, the guys that who write it are excellent at storytelling.
Yeah, and it's...
And they obviously made a much longer movie, but they just cut so much of it out. It just felt really chopped.
They did. And they chopped things that I still just feel... Like, I don't know, they did that big thing with Anduin Lothar and his son. Now, that to me is not pivotal to the entire story. But then they cut the fact that, you know, Medivh, Lothar and King Lane have been friends for their entire life. And
yeah, they kind of insinuate
that.
That
is a massive... I don't feel that it was at all. And,
well,
they didn't even seem to care that he'd not bothered to see them for 6 years. Like... I just kind of feel like, you know, his betrayal of Azeroth is really bad because he betrays them and they don't believe it and they don't see it. And that to me is the pivotal humanity of that story. And yet they glossed over that, but then they made this big deal about this son and this big death scene and they drew that out and that was quite cheesy. And that to me is... I don't know.
It's a shame.
They could have made it more real. I think it would have resonated better with an audience that didn't really know the characters.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel that people who don't know the games at all will be, like, just totally baffled as to what's going on a lot of the time.
I don't know. Look, I've heard from a few people that haven't played the game that they thought it was okay. They thought it was pretty two-dimensional, though, because they didn't get it.
They could have done with a lot more character building, like, just so that we could get to know them before they had... Like, it was very plot-driven.
Yes.
Stuff just happened, and they dealt with it. That was it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Garona was, like, probably the most developed character.
She was great. She was great. The one torn between the two worlds. She was really good.
Yeah, they changed her.
Kaga, I preferred a lot more the second time around. Once I got over the fact that they destroyed his character and the fact that, you know, he was meant to have been apprenticed to Medivh for, like, the last decade and they just made out...
They trashed that part.
They got rid of that and they just made out that he was just this nuisance that was there. But Kaga is such an important character to the Warcraft lore that, you know... Anyway, he was much better the second time around, I think, because I just enjoyed him. More stuff for future, and even though it didn't do very well and it's been smashed by critics, the reality is it's made more than enough money for a sequel through the Chinese.
So I hope there is another one.
So there is definitely already things that I don't know if they've officially confirmed it, but there's a lot that have basically said this is what the story is going to be about. They've already got the draft.
Okay.
So...
Well, it took them like 10 years to make this one, so who the hell
knows?
Well,
my gut is that they'd already have it in development. They have to. They can't afford to.
They can't
too much
of
an audience.
Long. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I don't think we've got any more for today. So if you want to get a hold of a copy of A Darker Shade of Magic by V.E. Schwab, we'll be doing that for our next book club book. Check out the giveaway on our website. You can get in touch with us. You can email us contact@teaandthetreetops.com or you can tweet us at teatreetops or at Oaken Bookcase and tell us all about what you thought. Actually, if you're going to write any spoilers, make sure you put them in the post comments or on Facebook where we can, you know, people don't have to look at them. And let us know what you thought of Crown's Gate.
Mm-hmm. You can also find a list of all the books and other things that we talked about in this episode, as well as our book reviews at the Tea in the Treetops blog, teaandthetreetops.com. Thanks so much for listening.
And we'll catch you again in a few weeks. Bye.
Bye. This episode of Tea in the Treetops podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download. I can do it, right? Okay. This episode of... okay.
Get a free audiobook download and 30 days free trial at audio...
At audibletrial.com/teatrop. Teatops.
Treetops.
I was doing okay till that.
That's okay. Just say it. audibletrial.com/treetops again. It's because it's not tea treetops. It's a bit different to normal.
audibletrial.com/teatrop. It's because we say tea in the treetops.
I know.
Okay, all right.